Gentlemen, you've heard time and again how mission critical it is to keep your testosterone level where it needs to be. Did you know that 1 in 4 men over 30 have low T levels and even experience downright hormonal imbalance? Well, this leads to all sorts of nasty symptoms that wreck your life. ED and low sex drive are the obvious ones, but also anxiety, brain fog, and even having a hard time making decisions. The association between low T and being an irritable pain in the ass is also well documented. It's scary stuff, and even if you go through the embarrassment, inconvenience, and expense to go to your doctor, you might not get diagnosed accurately. Worldwide, men's healthy sperm counts have dropped by 50% in the last 40 years, which is crazy. Hormonal imbalances and reduced testosterone levels are way too common. So, if you suspect this may be happening to you, what do you do? Well, I'm excited to introduce you to the newest supporter of the Mountaintop podcast, Let's Get Checked. When they contacted me, I was stoked immediately because their mission is to provide professional health testing for men that's easily accessible, and what's more, it's affordable, discreet, and fast. You don't have to go to the doctor at all, let alone fork over a copay. So how do you do it? Well, it's really easy. First, head to mountaintoppodcast.com/LGC for Let's Get Checked and order up your test online. It's delivered to you in a plain box so nobody has to know about it via next day delivery. Activate your test and collect your sample in the morning. Return it using the prepaid shipping label provided. When your sample arrives in the laboratory, confidential results will be available from your secure online account within 2 to 5 days. And once your results on 5 hormonal levels are available, they'll be reviewed by a real, actual physician. A nurse will then contact you for a phone consultation. That way, Let's Get Checked takes care of you from diagnosis to treatment without ever having to go to a doctor's office or a laboratory. Check it out for yourself, mountaintoppodcast.com/LGC. And hey, be sure to use Health25 at checkout to get an instant 25% off. Discreet, accurate, and affordable. Your health as a man is too important to pass this up. And with that, definitely don't pass up this upcoming episode, which is on the hero's journey. Stay tuned.
Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, your host, Scott McKay.
How's it going, gentlemen? This is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications, at Scott McKay on Twitter, Real Scott McKay on Instagram, Scott McKay on YouTube. The web address is mountaintoppodcast.com, and I invite you to join our rugged and ready group of real men, big four men, at the Mountaintop Summit on Facebook. Today, we're going to cover a topic in great detail that we have kind of mentioned in passing here and there on various and sundry other shows. So much so that when my guest presented himself to me as a potential guest, my first thought was, hey, you know, we already covered that. So what I did was I went to you guys in the Facebook group and I said, hey, what do you guys think of the hero's journey? Is it talked about too much? Have we not talked about it enough around here? And overwhelmingly, you guys said, let's go for it. So I got back in touch with my guest on today's show, who happens to be J. Scott McMillan. And as a guy whose name is J. Scott McKay, I had something in common with him already, to J. Scott Max, ready to hash this out. Good Scotsman, right? And we are indeed going to talk about the hero's journey. And the pact I've made with Scott is that we're not going to talk about the basics. We're not going to rehash what you've heard about, hey, what's the hero's journey and Joseph Campbell this and that in basic terms. We're going to dive in and talk not only about some of the really deep psychological ramifications of this, but more importantly, how it matters in your life and your development as a big four man, as the best man you can be. And specifically, and here's the part that I think is truly unique, we're going to talk about how it relates to your relationship with women and attracting them. So without anything further, J. Scott McMillan, welcome, bud.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Glad to be here. Glad to be here on just my favorite topic. So,
yeah, man. Now, make no mistake about it. You have built an entire practice around the hero's journey. Is that correct?
That's right. I really have. I wrote my book, Be the Hero of Your Life, and it does center around the whole hero's journey. And it's really been a great style and metaphor and concept for my whole life and my whole coaching practice.
And that's nothing unusual, because if you go back to Joseph Campbell, the academic and famous mythologist who's perhaps best known for his book, The Power of Myth, and subsequent television show, it was first talked about by Campbell in 1949. And indeed, George Lucas, having discovered the work of Joseph Campbell, realized that his first draft of his script for Star Wars was remarkably in line with what Campbell was talking about, and actually consulted with Campbell to make the original Star Wars, which we now know as A New Hope or Episode 4, even more in line with the hero's journey, such that it's almost really is an exact representation of what Campbell was talking about. Yet even something that has been so much at the forefront of our modern zeitgeist, as the Star Wars saga is, really, I've only heard about the hero's journey in particular within the last 4 years, and I hear about it almost everywhere. So what is it about the last 4 years in history that you think in particular has contributed to the hero's journey being given so much attention nowadays?
Yeah, I think it's probably the fact that Hollywood really found out about it. You know, they have been skirting around the issue a lot, but it's clear that if you use the hero's journey as your structure for your movie, you're going to have a successful movie. And I mean, I think that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is the general idea about finding yourself, if you will. It is a fairly popular notion now in self-help, you know, so that's popular. But I think that the other part of it is that you can stream now all the different movies and all the different documentaries about Joseph Campbell. And so you can, you know, stream that whole Bill Moyers, The Power of Myth, and really watch what Campbell does and really get it from his mouth. Instead of having to read the book, which is very thick and very boring, really, you can now watch this. So I think that those contribute to it.
And indeed, just about every movie with a male lead character, or every story being told by Hollywood with a male lead character nowadays, has some element to it of the hero's journey. You think of not only Star Wars, but certainly Rocky Balboa, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Breaking Bad, even. You know, Walter White goes through the hero's journey almost stereotypically, even though he's seen as kind of an anti-hero, as many characters are nowadays. And yet, this whole idea of the hero's journey didn't originate with Campbell. It's a Jungian idea based on his idea of archetypes, which, of course, refers to certain patterns that are ingrained within our culture. We don't really know where they came from. And other scholars kind of led up to Campbell as well. So this is something that goes back, good grief, to Beowulf and to Moses even. It goes so far back in our human nature to talk about this, right?
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about it is the power of myth. And of course, you know, Campbell was really the great mythologist and studied all the stories, of course. And we know that that's how he came up with this primary concept of the hero's journey. But myth in itself is this beautiful way that can explain how we are to be humans in our life. And it's gone back through the time of telling stories. And so stories and myths and religions, which Campbell clearly identifies as myths, are the way that man learns about the world. And so we've always been able to identify that. So clearly movies now that almost could be considered to some degree our current myths, they relate to us so well. And so if you follow the hero's journey story, you're going to have a good movie because it relates to the human condition.
Yeah, most certainly, because everybody resonates with it, not only relating to it, but we just love it. We love these stories, and they follow absolutely a predictable pattern, yet we're still in for it every time. We're all about it. Mm-hmm. And here's something that I would love to pick your brain about. I'm curious to find out what you think of what I'm going to say, because it's going to come off as somewhat controversial to a lot of my listeners, for sure. If you know anything about Joseph Campbell, he has become a bit of a champion to the atheists out there. Because he says, hey, look, everything you believe and you call faith, you're really kidding yourself. You're allowing yourself to believe something is true when really it's a myth like everything else out there. Before Jesus had 12 disciples, other people had 12 disciples. Before there was a story of Moses, you know, other religions out there followed the same story. If you talk about Gautama the Buddha, if you talk about Muhammad the prophet, hey, you know what? It's all the same story. So you know what? Your religion is not really special. You're fooling yourself with a myth. And that has fueled the fire for atheists out there. I would argue that if there is one common myth that humans are so drawn to, it may actually instead point to the contrary, which is there is one common God out there. Now, we may be worshiping that God in different ways. Whether there's one way to worship that God that's better than the other allegedly mythological ways out there, you know, that's another whole discussion to have. But what do you think about this idea of this common archetype pointing to the human quest to acknowledge something bigger, a creator, as it were?
Yes. And clearly Campbell was, this was his main point, that myths allow us to understand the meaning of life and the meaning of the unknown parts of life. And so, interestingly enough, if the atheists are trying to say that Joseph Campbell is trying to prove their points, I would argue that he's absolutely not an atheist. And if you use the term atheist as in someone who doesn't believe in a higher power and believes that this is all we got here on earth, he believes in the spirituality and the nature of, well, the spirituality of nature, and that we're all part of nature and that God is within us. So yes, he believes that religions and the three great religions, if you will, are myths, and they are myths and story that help the people of the times when they were written, the scriptures or documents, that these were the way that they tried to understand the world. And well, the world was a huge mystery back then. They didn't have the science we have today. And so, you know, this obviously is controversial because our society is primarily Christian based, and you've got these three major religions, and they're very tight in their columns, and they don't want to, you know, think about the other religions. But Campbell clearly said that all the religions, all the myths, all the stories talk about the human condition, the nature. But the most interesting thing about that, it's how do they explain the unknown? Right. And so you've got the old time Aztecs and in the Egyptians that see this great sun up in the sky. Well, this sun clearly has these mystical powers. If the sun goes away, we die. You can't touch the sky. You can't touch the sun. So it must live in a different realm. Well, clearly it must be a god then. And so it would be something easily that you would worship. And so the myths and the stories of the time were trying to explain that and understand that. And so that's what I believe about that and sort of the how the atheists, you know, view it. I get that they can kind of relate to it because Campbell is saying that Christianity is a myth in a story, but he clearly believes in this higher power connectedness.
Yeah, you know what? As you're talking, I was reminded of the simple fact of it's very arrogant to believe we can put whatever God is in a box. Clearly, it's bigger than us. It created us. It created us without full knowledge of the universe. So whenever people try to say, hey, you know what? I have all of the answers and I'm sure of it, you know, at the risk of offending certain people of certain faiths who are listening to this, even when we do adhere to a certain faith, we do well as human beings to show some humility towards that which created us or who created us. Because even if you believe in the inerrant word of the Holy Bible, for example, you still haven't been taught how to fix your pickup truck in it. There's still truth in there you don't have. And I know Emily and I, as we travel around the world, we'll fly, say, China Airlines, and they'll have exercises you can do. You know, Tai Chi exercises you can do as you land. And wow, they work, you know, but that's something that the Buddhists talk about a lot. And if you listen to the Hindus talk about chakras, there's something to the fact that you feel things differently in your head than you do in your heart, as you do in your gut or even in your balls, you know. And there's an acknowledgement of that even in Western culture, even if it isn't directly attributed to the Hindu idea or the Buddhist of chakras. In other words, we have a gut feeling about something. We love something with all of our heart, et cetera, et cetera. So this whole idea of truth often gets attributed directly to what Joseph Campbell would coin a myth, yet there's truth associated with it, which, if anything, only leads human beings to feel the need to have faith towards something bigger, because that faith, no matter how you slice it, is required of us because we don't have the capacity as humans to comprehend it. We only know what we're given. And I think that offers a sense of awe and perhaps compassion towards that which we don't know on our part as humans, which perhaps makes the idea of the hero's journey all the more intriguing and fascinating to us as humans, because we are ourselves on a journey all through life, and it takes somewhat of the twists and turns naturally that the hero's journey does, doesn't it? And that's kind of what's led you to believe that there's something deeper and more practical there within the hero's journey that can help us be better men, right?
Right. And it was interestingly, when I learned about the hero's journey, I was studying documentary filmmaking at the time, but I was also going through suffering through some, actually it was a relationship breakup, and I had been through, you know, divorce and breakups and at different times, but this particular relationship, I just was really having a hard time, you know, getting over it. And at the time, I was journaling a lot and writing sort of free form, just to kind of for therapy. And I came across the hero's journey, and I immediately saw the hero's journey as a parallel into my own life. And I actually, at the time, put my life into all the 12 stages of the hero's journey, and I understood myself better than I ever had before, because I used that rigor of, well, in stage one, what was I doing in my life? And I related that to the movies that I saw, that the heroes, so the first stage is the ordinary world, right? So what was I doing before something happened in my life that had to call me to adventure and take my journey? And so I put my life into the 12 stages. That gave me such an understanding of myself that that's what started this whole sort of liking and understanding and really diving into the hero's journey more. And now I've learned that not only is it great for ourselves, but it just helps us understand life, what life is, and the meaning of life and the unknown parts of it. So that's what I learned from it.
You know, for the guys who may actually somehow be hearing about the hero's journey for the very first time within this show, give us the brief overview of how this archetypal story looks, how it flows.
Okay. So I may jump back and forth when I'm talking about the mythology of it and then how it connects to our personal, but I'll try to, you know, keep them separate. But of course, Joseph Campbell studied all the myths, and he realized there was one basic story theme that covers all great stories. And it uses that archetype of the hero. And of course, when we talk about archetypes and the Jungian archetypes, we're talking about this universal knowledge that we all have embedded in us, that when we hear a archetype like the king, and or the hero or the temptress, we generally understand what that means in our environment. So the hero's journey follows this hero through the story of their journey. And typically what we're starting off is there's an ordinary world, which is the very beginning. This is where the hero doesn't know they're a hero yet. They're just living in their ordinary world. Life is going down. They don't think that there's anything other than what they're doing right then. And then something calls them to adventure. Something happens in their life that pushes them out into this unknown world. And now they got to deal with their shit. They got to figure stuff out, but they don't know how, and they're afraid to, right? So they refuse the call because we're all afraid. We don't want to go out there and deal with the unknown. And eventually, after you've had the call to adventure, if you don't answer it, it's going to continue to come back at you harder and harder. And I always say the universe is going to knock you on your ass if you don't listen, answer the call, and then take that journey. And you cross the threshold, and now you've got to figure it out on your own, if you will. And this is what all the great movies do, is that something happens, takes them out. Like Star Wars is a great example. So Luke is on the planet Tatooine. He's being a moisture farmer, he wants to do something, he's having this calling, and then boom, his aunt and uncle get killed by the Empire. He's got Obi-Wan Kenobi as his mentor, which is very important. You need a mentor to help guide you through, and now he's forced to go on the journey. He didn't want to leave at first, but he's got nothing to do. He has to go and take his journey. And at that point, he's now going to learn to be a Jedi Knight, right? And he's got to learn the trials and tribulations. So from the mythical standpoint, taking the journey is about slaying the dragons, the ogres in the movies. But in our personal life, we have our own personal dragons, right? So we have issues that are in our life, that are in our way, that are holding us back. We're fearful. But the key to the hero's journey is to face your fears. The only way you're going to get to the other side is to go through your fears, right? So that's the crux of the hero's journey, is moving through your fears and learning the skills and the tools and finding the mentors and the allies that you're going to have on your journey. All the stories have that, and we all have that in our own life. And if you can look at movies and stories and try to interpret those in your own life at a very detailed level, like who were your mentors? Who were your allies that helped you through some of the hard times in your life? When you do this, it informs you of who you are now based on what you've been through and the decisions that you've made. And when you fully accept that and understand that your life is clearly the decisions and the situations and the journey that you've been on, at the end of that, when you find the treasure, which is for movies and for heroes, you've got the treasure of the gold, the treasure of the woman, the treasure of winning the battle, whatever it is. And for personally, it could be getting that new job. It could be getting that relationship you want. It could be getting the promotion. Whatever is out there that you're seeking to either overcome or to gain, you find the treasure. But the beautiful thing about the hero's journey is that that's only stage 9. You still have 3 stages left to get to the return to the final. And the key to the journey is when you think you've found the treasure, well, good luck. Guess again, you haven't. The universe is going to test you one more time on the way back to make sure that you really learned your lesson and that you have secured that treasure. And there's a final battle right before you get to the very end. And once you've gone through that battle, now you've gone to stage 12. You've returned, and it's always a circle, you've returned sort of back to your ordinary world with the treasure and the knowledge and the skills that you've gained as you've gone through the journey. And then we go on another journey. And that's the essence of the hero's journey.
So like when you've returned, it's like you're giving that salvation to the rest of the people who are depending on you to save the world, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely saving the world, right? And so that's the key in the movies. They're saving the world. But the metaphor is that you now bring back that knowledge, and you're almost required now to become a mentor.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, this is the mentorship. This is the key. This is, I've been through it. I've done this. Now, it's not done in a cocky way, but it's like, hey, I've got some knowledge and some skills that I've learned. Let me now impart that into the world, into the village, you know, to my friends, to my family, to whoever.
That's the sequel to the first movie, is the original hero becoming the mentor to the next hero.
Absolutely.
That's so true. I mean, it goes so far back even to the Bible, right?
Mm-hmm.
The story of Luke Skywalker is the story of Moses in many, many ways. Now, as you were talking about the flow of the hero's journey, one of the things that came to mind is how Joseph Campbell also talks about the belly of the whale, which of course is a biblical reference to Jonah, right?
Right.
The belly of the whale is something we in modern society don't have time for anymore. It's all immediate gratification. Yet the archetypal vision for how this story unfolds isn't you go out there, oh, you slay your dragon, come home. Oh, cool. This all happened 10 minutes later. Mm-hmm. It's there's a process. There are things that need to be learned, that need to be perfected, that need to be put into practice. You got to learn. You've got to go to Yoda and learn how to become a Jedi before you're going to be able to succeed as a Jedi, let alone save the world and then, you know, mentor everybody in the movies made in the 2010s, right? So there's that process. And that process of changing the habits, building the skills, changing your mindsets is something we've got to be patient through. And that's the part that I think people really lack nowadays because of our immediate gratification society. The other thing you mentioned is how the hero starts at his or her home base and then dives out into the theater of the unknown, completes this entire full circle journey, and then comes back home. That's an important part of it.
It is.
And Joseph Campbell would talk about how there's this theater of the known, and you dive out into something that's completely unknown, figure it out, and deal with all the different trials and tribulations and meet all these people along the way who help you, and then come back and give back. And that's an integral part of the journey. Once we've succeeded in life, we can't just sit on our laurels and enjoy ourselves. we have to go leave that legacy. And I think that's a brilliant, brilliant thought.
It is. And when you've gone through the journey, if you've ever had any doubts that you could be a mentor, that you could be a leader, it's probably because you haven't finished your hero's journey and or one of them.
Or haven't started it. Because, you know, you talked about kind of how there's an imposter syndrome baked into the beginning, right? When one is still at home and thinking, ah, you know what, I'm not the right person for this. You know, go pick someone else.
Absolutely. And even if you've had the call, right? Even if, and in some stories, it's a calling. It's a knowing. It's just like, I know there's something more for me out there. But usually you're going to refuse the call. But it's like, who am I, you know, to do this? But what's going to happen is the universe, once you've had the call, is going to build that up and ratchet it up and eventually knock you on your ass and push you out there, whether you want to go or not. And then you got to deal with it. But I think the interesting part of this is that you've got that imposter syndrome and you're going to get shoved out one way or the other into your journey. But by the time you go through the journey, you've learned the skills and you've gained the mentors. At that point, you can fully accept being the mentor and the imposter syndrome goes away. It's a very natural process. I think once you go through that, the confidence just there.
Yes, the confidence of having been through the battle and now realizing, hey, since I lived through this, I want to go back to all the other youngins out there, all the greenhorns who may be feeling they're not worthy and say to them, you know, and this is such an archetypal way of phrasing it in and of itself, basically, is if I can do it, you can do it. You know, I don't know how many guys I've told that, and I mean it when I say it, you know.
And that's the thing, that when you've gone through the journey, you absolutely mean it when you say it, because and you don't say it in a cocky way, in an arrogant way, because you're saying, look, not that, hey, you know, I've done this, lad, you ought to just listen to me. It's really like, let me show you, you know, I can show you these things. I can talk to you in terms that you'll understand now.
Now, the interesting part about coining this as the hero's journey is that in every one of these stories, invariably, whoever is cast as the hero comes off heroic in some way. In other words, they're fighting for something bigger than their own self-preservation or having more money or something selfish. Yet, you know, there are twists and turns nowadays where Hollywood in particular has fun with creating anti-heroes. They're bad guys, but we end up rooting for them because I guess our minds and our emotions are somehow tricked into seeing this hero's journey unfolding that we're so familiar with and attached to after having seen it dozens and dozens of times in our lives that we can't help but root for these guys. I mean, you know, Quentin Tarantino is a master of making us root for really, really bad people, you know, in his movies. And of course, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, the showrunners behind Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, are also masters at making you root for bad guys. I mean, everybody in a Quentin Tarantino movie, it seems like at some level is a bad person. And same goes true for both Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And we as humans kind of have fun with that because it's such a pattern interrupt. But yeah, notwithstanding that, the architecture of the hero's journey is that of a guy who's trying to do good in the world. Yet, isn't it amazing how after we go through the hero's journey in our whole life and we come back home and we want to mentor others, we're very hesitant to call ourselves heroes?
Well, the word hero is a big word. And
it's loaded, isn't it?
Yeah, and I hear that a lot. People will say, well, what if I don't identify as a hero? What if I don't really think I'm a hero? And it goes back to what I said before. It's like, it doesn't matter. Heroes really, you know, that doesn't have to use that connotation at first. It's great for stories. But when we adapt it to our personal selves, it's really more about you're going to go on a journey anyways, and you've got to face your fears to get through to the other side anyways. And by the time you do that, you will be the kind of person that can become a mentor, whether you want to call them a hero or not.
Yeah, exactly. I've lost count, for example, of how many times I've told guys on the phone who are considering doing a coaching program with me that I believe in their success perhaps even more than they do right now. And it's not because I have some super heroic capability. It's because I've walked through that tunnel, seen the light at the end of it, and emerged. And I see where they are in their own rendition of their own hero's journey. And I know they're going to make it. I tell them I'm like a skydiving instructor. You know, you may be thinking, man, this is my first time jumping out of a plane. Anything could happen and it might be terrible. But hey, you know what? This is like jump number 2000 for me and I've got dinner plans. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that is the job of a mentor, is to basically be a coach to whoever's starting their hero's journey. And the beauty of Star Wars is you go back into the prequels and see Obi-Wan Kenobi go through his own journey before he was fit to be a mentor for Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I think that mentorship is built into the hero's journey. It's a core feature of the hero's journey. And all the movies have great mentors, of course. You know, you can just go down the list, you know, Dumbledore and Gandalf and, of course, Yoda and on and on and on. But the interesting thing, too, is that during the hero's journey, when the hero has jumped into finally the journey part and they've crossed that threshold, they're going to meet people in their life that want to be mentors or think they could be mentors or allies, let's say. But the interesting thing is the hero that has to evaluate that, because not everybody is going to qualify for a mentor. And so you just learn that, and you learn who's going to be on your side and who's not on your side. And that's part of the journey, is that you build that skill of who's going to be with me, who can I really trust, and who can I, you know, not trust. And by the time you get through your journey again, that's what also makes you a great mentor, is that you've been able to identify what are good characteristics and how a mentor works and how they don't.
You know, that idea of the Force being with you is absolutely baked into Campbell's idea of the hero's journey. And indeed, as you're seeking to tap into that universal power, there are people who are going to try to derail you. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Emperor and Darth Vader in Star Wars, you know, turn to the dark side, you know. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely the template that the hero's journey is based on. And it's fascinating, isn't it? Because we as mere mortal humans can so resonate with that experience. You got damned if you don't, damned if you do decisions, which we see in all sorts of hero stories. And you got to make some decision rather than no decision. You're faced with it. You kind of just hope to God, literally, that you make the right decision. Sometimes there's a clear difference between good and bad, and it's a matter of sticking to your purpose, which is bigger and better and, dare I say, more benevolent than oneself, versus the selfish route, where you get all the riches and get all the girls and get to retire to a life of luxury and perhaps laziness. And a lot of that is built in to the hero's journey. And man, it's something we face as human beings constantly if we're actually out there in the real world.
And the fact that the hero has to go above and beyond themselves, they have to do something for the greater good of the world. True heroes are going to do that. And again, I think it's built into the hero's journey. It's why we all can resonate with it, because by the time you go through that, those ordeals and those parts of the journey, you have the tools. Like you said, you have to make a decision one way or the other. Some are going to be, you know, clear. Some you're going to have to just trust, and you're going to learn one way or the other. Well, was that a good decision or a bad decision? It's like the failures aren't failures. They're learning opportunities, right?
They're plot complications in the hero's journey, basically.
That's what Hollywood loves that.
It's hearkening back to what you mentioned about that part right before the hero comes home, where he thinks he's won the prize. He thinks he's accomplished the goal, but there's another big challenge ahead. That's the plot complication, right?
Yeah, and I think that actually is the most interesting part of the hero's journey for me. Is that fact that after you think you have it figured out, you don't. And you better keep your eye on the ball. And that's where a lot of people drop the journey. They take their eye off the ball. They fumble. And they didn't get to the end zone. And that's why the hero's journey resonates so well. It's like, remember what the goal is, to get back home. So don't get cocky. Don't take your eye off the ball. Be serious about it as you've got the treasure. You've got this thing in your hand. But make sure you bring it home.
Yeah, persevering through all those failures. Abraham Lincoln losing so many elections before finally becoming president of the United States. Right. It's all part of the hero's journey. It's all baked in.
Yeah, and then the other area that I'd be remiss if we really didn't talk about, and we've hinted around it, is this essence that something has to die in order to be reborn. Such a crucial part of the hero's journey, because as you're learning these lessons, and we haven't talked a lot about some of the Jungian stuff about the ego, but part of the ego during the journey has to die. And it has to die so that now the soul can take over the journey part. And so when you face parts of situations in your life and you just know that you're going to have to give up friends, family, possessions, and whatever, and they're hard decisions to make. But if you really know that you're on this journey, you're going to be prepared to give up and to let something die, so like a phoenix, can be rebirthed, right? And that's also part of the whole death and resurrection motif of myth and religion. And that's a very serious part of the hero's journey.
Yeah, that's a point well taken. Another part that I think we would be remiss if we didn't cover in some detail, Scott, is this whole idea of the goddess, which is also integral to Joseph Campbell's rendition of the hero's journey. It's actually in the script. And of course, we love to talk about women around here. That's the central purpose of the show. And certainly a part of the journey for all the heroes listening to this show, past, present, and future, is getting the girl. And the goddess is talked about in terms of first being an enabler. Princess Leia has the key hidden within R2-D2 to rescuing the world and making everything okay again. And also, the goddess is portrayed as a temptress, sirens, mm-hmm. right? Who can shipwreck you. And on one level, that kind of plays with the idea of women being angels and demons at the same time, who can either bless us with pleasure or ruin us with hardship. And whichever mindset you have about women can be fed by this archetype. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about your perception of what exactly Joseph Campbell was talking about in terms of this goddess.
Well, the interesting thing is Campbell viewed, well, it wasn't even Campbell, but he viewed through study of mythology, is that women equal life. They give birth. They're the only way that we can come to life is through women. And so women are put on this pedestal as the goddesses because they are the giver of life. And without women, we don't have that. Now, with that comes certainly this mysterious power they have over men, of course, right? And so you do have the sirens and the temptress that can sort of put one over on a man. But ultimately, there is this reverence for women. And yes, men have to be sturdy and they have to be strong and they have to go out and hunt and bring back, the food and be the protectors. And that true masculinity is born out of all those ancient myths, of course. But women are very sacred in a lot of different ways. And, you know, we can't get there without them. They birth life and they want to make sure that whoever they are going to partner up with is strong and has the male masculine side. And you've got the female, the feminine side, which is the nurturing and creating life.
Yeah, that relationship between the masculine and feminine is in fact archetypal and goes way back. Interestingly enough, you said some things I'm sure are going to trigger some of these guys out there. Mm-hmm. Key phrases like putting women on a pedestal and fearing them. And guys are thinking, yeah, you know, I tried that. It didn't work. Women put me in the just be friend zone every time I do that. But to kind of focus this discussion on where the truth really is there, instead of getting hung up on that perception, you also talked in detail about how this archetypal sense of the hero's relationship to the goddess also points to the hero being a provider, being a protector, enabling that femininity. So yes, we appreciate, respect, adore that femininity. We do what we can to protect and provide for the women we love. And sometimes that's rendered as putting them on a pedestal and treating them like a goddess. But we are also doing what it takes to show power, to show worthiness, indeed to show heroism, right? Something bigger than us, the protection of the woman we love and indeed the children we love. How many times within hero's journey stories are the very children of the hero threatened by the bad guy? You know, I'm going to go kill your wife and your family. And how does that chill us as men to hear that? Oh, no. My God. It always makes us really, really despise the villain who would utter such a horrible notion.
Yeah, don't mess with, women say they're nurturing, but, you know, the man is the protector. Don't mess with our family. Right. You are in for it.
Right. So there's that balance. We're not just putting a woman on a pedestal and leaving her there and acting, supplicating to her and begging her for attention. We're doing something to keep her on that pedestal, despite that which around us environmentally might want to knock her down off of it. It's our pedestal. It's our family. It's those we love who we're protecting. And yeah, I think that's the key differentiation that guys can sense if they're up to the challenge between I'm just begging women to like me because they're so amazing versus I'm taking an active role in helping a woman feel amazing.
And I think we all agree at some point that if you're just putting women on the pedestal all the time, that's not going to work. That's not going to really get the women.
No,
right? It's not. Yeah, it's not going to get the women. And you have to stay in your masculine, because when you're in your fully masculine, the women in their fully feminine will connect to that. And so the friend zone, we know it doesn't work because you're not in your masculine, and you got to stay in those lanes. But part of that lane is to be reverent of what the women have and to understand femininity and know that it's different and it flows and they're going to change their mind. They're going to do a lot of crazy stuff, but that's the true end of their femininity. Our true end is to be the sturdy, be the protector. And so that has been talked about in myths forever, and it still lives today.
We don't have to slay a woolly mammoth with our bare hands, but we still have to live up to that archetypal representation as a man, even if we don't feel like a hero. It's amazing, really, when we keep our eye on the ball, like you said so eloquently earlier, that we can actually very easily be a hero to women. They'll view us that way, even if we don't see ourselves that way.
Yeah.
What a fascinating discussion, and so practical to our daily lives, which is what I was rooting for happening in this entire show. And Scott, J. Scott McMillan, I want to point these guys to your book, Be the Hero of Your Life, which they can get their hands on not only from your website, but also on Amazon. So I'm going to point them to your site, which they can reach by going to mountaintoppodcast.com/J. Scott. J-S-C-O-T-T. I like it. Yeah. And you know what? Just for good measure, if they put J-S-C-O-T, it'll point to the same place, although I find that improbable because even guys who've listened to this show for years and years still write me, hey, Scott, with two T's, which is fine either way. And I will also take your book and put it at the top of my Amazon influencer page, which guys can get to by going to mountaintoppodcast.com/Amazon. So, once again, go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/J. Scott to find out more about J. Scott McMillan and read a little bit more about what he has to say about the hero's journey and pick up a copy of his book, Be the Hero of Your Life. And if you just want to get straight to the book, go to mountaintoppodcast.com/Amazon. J. Scott McMillan, I am so glad that you have made this the focal point of your practice, because I think you're doing something that indeed is heroic and makes the world a better place. So thanks for joining us today, man.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate that. And I loved getting into the depths of the hero's journey. So thank you.
Yeah, man, that's what we love to do around here. Get past the surface and dive right in. And guys, if you want to get past the surface of your own life and dive right in and perhaps become a hero, even if you're saying to yourself right now, who, me? Well, you're not alone. I've said that. J. Scott McMillan has said that. Every other guy listening to the sound of my voice right now and then some has said that. We all feel that imposter syndrome. We all doubt we're going to be able to make a mark in this world. We all doubt we're going to get the woman we really want. Yet, archetypally, it's inside us to do that. It's inside us to make that happen. That is how a life is well lived. And if you want to talk more about it, go to mountaintoppodcast.com, click the button in the upper right-hand corner, and talk to me for free for 25 minutes. That's how the ball gets rolling here. That's how we're going to put a plan of action in place to get you from where you are right now out into the world to become that hero of your own life and the life of the woman who will be in your life sooner than later. And I couldn't be happier to help you be a part of that. So go to mountaintoppodcast.com and talk to me for free for 25 minutes. And until I talk to you again real soon on the next episode of the Mountaintop Podcast, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free X and Y Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.